How's your week? That good, no, huh?
Yeah.
You just spend all day listening to Relay FM shows?
I did. And then I wrote about the last of a four-book series that I just read. But the Relay FM stuff launches, I think, probably the more interesting of the two, since I had nothing to do with it. But it was great to hear all of the podcasts back in action again.
Which one's your favorite? No, don't tell me.
I'm not going to tell you, because you didn't listen to any of them, did you?
I did. I listened to the Casey and Mike Power Hour while I was making coffee this morning. And then I listened to a bit of Connected on the way to work, and I listened to a bit of Inquisitive on the way home from work.
Did you get to the part where they started talking about Star Trek Shuttle Pod, even though that's not what the reference for the iPod is? It's a 2001 Space Odyssey reference.
I did not get to that part.
Yes.
Sounds great out of context.
Well, I mean, they were talking about the name of it, and Federico was talking about how, oh, well, it was inspired by the Shuttle Pod from Star Trek. And that is not correct. It was inspired by the pod from 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Well,
that's... Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Yeah, that's interesting.
No.
I did not know that.
And then in the show notes, they had the link to the Memory Alpha Star Trek Wikia page on shuttle pods, which if you've never seen Star Trek shuttle pods, they're incredibly depressing. Because they're just space-saving things that are easy to transport around between set shoots, so they're kind of ridiculous.
Hmm.
Just sort of like a box that you can sit in with two chairs.
It's as fascinating as the rest of Star Trek.
Jerk. Are you enjoying a beverage this evening?
I am drinking water because... unlike the most of our shows, this one I'm starting out incredibly sweaty because I've had a long, hard day of working in an office around people where I've had to wear pants and presentable clothing.
Oh, okay.
I don't enjoy the heat and the humidity.
Nah. Well, for some reason, I thought I would have tea, so...
No.
It's probably not a good idea, though. I'll probably be up.
What kind of tea is it? yeah, sound older. Oh, I can't have tea this evening.
Earl Grey. tea Earl Grey hot, as they would say on Star Trek.
What? Is that how they order it from the computer?
That's how Captain Picard orders it from the computer.
Computer!
No, you don't do that. You just walk up to the replicator and you say the thing you want.
Tea Earl Grey hot.
And then it makes it. And you don't really need to give it a lot of instructions, which is kind of remarkable in and of itself that it would just sort of magically pick the best possible thing that it would make for you. You don't need to give it your preferences.
Yeah, what does it do with words that have multiple meanings? Does it ask for clarification?
Sometimes, but, you know, you'd think, like, tea, Earl Grey, hot was just kind of ambiguous. It'd be like, well, would you like it? What temperature would you like it? How would you like the tea? Like, do you want it strong? Do you want it weak? Do you want anything in it?
I imagine, like, coffee, there's an optimal temperature for tea.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's for what you would like, because most people tend to like things really, really hot.
I like them at a temperature at which I can actually drink them without hurting myself.
Lukewarm or cold?
No, I meant like just below steaming hot.
Oh.
Wow.
See, that's too hot. See, exactly. This is the replicator problem.
Fine. 152 degrees.
Yeah, but they use Celsius in Star Trek because it's the future.
The future takes place in Europe.
Apparently. Those commie, I don't know. I'm just kidding.
They're not all communists, are they?
No, they're not. They're most certainly not.
Not even most of them, I don't think.
No.
Except maybe on the weekends.
No.
You know, for fun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
So.
Should we take some more drinkies while we're drinking our beverages?
No, that was kind of ridiculous.
What a horrible thing to do. We don't really know how to use the internet very well, do we?
No. We're definitely not optimizing the internet for brands, for hashtag brands, yeah. And our personal image and whatnots.
Personal image.
To tweet storm about it. And,
apparently, I need some stuff. Sort of anti-frizz hair product.
No, I was just kidding. I didn't mean. I wasn't trying to be mean.
No, that wasn't mean at all. At all, it didn't bother me one bit.
Okay.
I have horrible hair. I've known it for a great many years. Like, since I was born.
It's okay. Everybody's got bad hair sometimes and forever for some people.
Curly afros.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I told you, mine's got that stupid wave in it or whatever, so it doesn't, like, lay flat or anything.
Hmm. I thought you were just a big fan of 80s hairstyles.
Yes.
Yes. I'm looking at these words in my little document of things we're supposed to talk about, and they're mostly just blurry. I don't even know what they say. Oh, yeah. I gotta go fix my garage door after this.
You took it all apart and it just stayed apart? You didn't put it back together?
Oh, I didn't have the replacement part yet.
Oh.
Luckily, I could get it on Amazon Prime for half the price that I could get it directly from Sears, and, like, 7 days quicker.
LOL Sears.
Yeah, they're still one of the top brands when it comes to garage door openers.
Mm.
Do they have different, is there a different name for a garage door opener for people in other countries? Lorry housings? I don't know.
I have no clue. Well, that would just be for trucks. All right, moving.
I think I know why we don't record at night anymore.
Nah, because, well, you're discombobulated.
I'm mostly discombobulated all the time. It's just I'm tired on the downslope rather than tired on the upslope like when we normally record in the air quotes morning at 2 p.m.
None of what you said would make sense to a normal person.
Well, I wake up, I make coffee, I sit down at my desk. It's 2 p.m. We record an episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Except now. I got to be at this office in the morning with regular people in pants.
It's exciting.
No.
So, I'm just going to start steering this train wreck somewhere on the
you're
rails.
Right. You're things. You're allowed.
Okay, so... testing. All right.
Any follow-up? Or are you just going to get right into
it? Well, I was gonna say, did you have a chance to watch the video I sent you of the text on screens little snippet thing from Tony Zhao?
I did.
And
it was rather fascinating to see those all back to back, and the jokes they were poking at hackers, of course.
Yes, hackers, one of the best uses of on-screen visualizations of the internet.
Seminal film in the nerd mind in the 90s.
I liked it. And of course it does end with Orbital.
Hackers?
Mm-hmm. I told you that last week.
I didn't remember if it actually ended with Orbital. I remember they were swimming and then somebody hacked a building to make the lights make a shape or something.
Yeah, they were kissing in the pool.
Right.
Angelina Jolie and her first husband.
Did she marry that guy?
Yes, she married Johnny Lee Miller.
Johnny Lee Miller. What happened to him?
A lot of nothing, couple failed shows, and then I think he's on Elementary right now on CBS.
Wait, he's not the main guy, is he?
Yes, he's Sherlock.
That's what he turned into?
You know, like we were saying, not everybody has great hair forever.
No. I thought they were different guys. I thought that was Yeah, no, I thought, I haven't seen much of Elementary, but I thought he's good there.
It's been 20 years, Dan.
Well, he looks different.
Oh, yeah, go figure. What a surprise.
People age, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So the texting montage screen thing, I thought it was good. Do you like the modern trend of the texting?
Yeah, I like it. In some, as they mentioned, do more interesting jobs of it than others, and some have a certain striving for a certain visual consistency of the text, so it doesn't, like he was saying in Sherlock, it doesn't look like it looks on the screen. It's not supposed to. It looks just, it could be like anything as a burn-in, but it floats around and does stuff or whatever. It has a certain style to it. As opposed to, like, literally having the word bubbles from the conversation appear. Which something like a certain movie you made me watch does quite literally.
Yeah. Now, see, the thing, I got what he was saying. I kind of disagree. I like the House of Cards version because it's not necessarily the interface from the phone. It is a text bubble and it says, who it's coming from and who it's going to. But, you know, any sort of IM client is going to have a similar sort of word bubble thing, and it doesn't really... I don't think it dates it to use the word bubble in a stylistic way. I mean, if you were trying to replicate it verbatim from like a phone interface, obviously it's going to get dated there, but doing your own sort of little word bubble, because the ones in House of Cards have additional detail on them to show who they're coming from and what time and that kind of stuff. And I like those a lot, especially because they're a little more subtle than the ones in Sherlock.
I like those as well, and I think it's like just like you're saying this, because it's stylized, but it's not it's not literally what you'd see on your screen right now. They didn't put something there, because I was watching something else recently, and they were showing a phone, and it was, you know, pre iOS 7 on the screen, and so yeah. All the word bubbles and everything are different. And it's just like, wow, that really kind of knocks you out of the movie for a minute, because it makes you think about the date of it.
Yeah, so I think House of Cards, nice
they didn't do that.
Season 2 got dinged a lot for that, because they released the show real near the release of iOS 7, and obviously the work had been done prior, so there's no way they were going to get that updated. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the devices at this point are what? They're just glass screens with black backs, so you can't really tell what they are. It's all about the visualization that pops up on screen. One thing I thought was interesting in the video that he kind of touched on, he didn't go into exhaustive details, the how to visualize the internet, because, you know, it's a bigger and bigger part of movies these days. I don't think it's quite on the level of like being considered like a character in the movie, but that's certainly one area that people have done some wacky things that aren't necessarily all that successful.
No, certainly not. And he, you know, points out WikiLeaks' very sort of literal, like, file drawers and office desks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's absurd. As well as, of course, hackers, like, floaty tech stuff. And
yeah, it's so great. The little, he's got the little, like, he's got Google Glass on, basically, right? Remember, he's like flying around through the system. He's got the glasses on there, he can see stuff.
Well, the words kind of float around the screen, and then they sort of float around in front of his face.
I meant like in the end sequence of Hackers. Didn't he have like the equivalent of Google Glass on, where he was flying around looking for the trash file?
No,
where they were like killing each other with like pesticides and rat bombs and stuff, or whatever the hell they called them.
There were rabbits and there were worms and.
Right. Now, they all had silly animations, because, like, apparently computer viruses look like little bunnies hopping around on your screen.
Yeah, it was utterly ridiculous. And it was, Lorraine Bracco was the flustered person who was trying to manage the situation that Penn was trying to explain everything to. It was some weird casting.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one in a really long time. We should probably talk about that at some point on the show.
Yeah, that would be ripe for dissection.
It would be a disaster is what it would be.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we were going to get on this trend of talking about things we actually like.
Yeah, and then this week happened.
I don't dislike things this week. Do you dislike things this week?
No, I like one of the things this week.
Yeah, we'll focus mostly on that one thing then.
Yeah. Well, before we move on too far, I want to point out that Tony Zhu, I hope I'm saying his name correctly, and it's not like Tony Zhao, but he had a follow-up tweet after he spent all that time on the documentary, and he says, I just realized now I forgot to include reboot in the latest video. God damn it, all caps. So I would like to put that in the show notes, because if you haven't watched the opening sequence to Reboot recently, it's something you should do, because it's utterly ridiculous and does not hold up at all.
I have not. All I remember off the top of my head is flying around through the computer world.
Oh, it's so bad. It's so bad. No shadows, all kinds of weird stuff.
Can I do it now?
Especially the first season. Yeah. Cut all this out. I put it at a link in the robot.
Oh, the audio is not going to come through because I have it. I put my settings back. Oh, man. That's... what would you call that kind of shade?
I think these are all Fong shaded.
Oh, I love how the dude has chrome hair. That's great. Yeah. I used to watch this show a lot.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember watching it, and I really liked it at the time. I thought it was super impressive. It is not.
Like the bad guy. The bad guy's got this like metal articulating jaw because he looks like a robot, but then his mouth flexes like he has lips.
Mm-hmm.
So great.
Yeah. Well, that always happens with movie robots. They try to like give them that robot articulation. Sorry, I'm pouring tea. not urinating. I swear to God.
You sure?
It's just tea. Just tea. I love tea from the teapot.
The things have like they either have color or texture, and it's like one color. There's no subtlety. There's no mixing of textures or shaders or anything.
Au contraire. For the really important things that have super high crazy energy, there's fractal procedural shaders all over them. So when the game, quote unquote, drops down into the grid to mainframe, it has the big purple procedural fluttering all over it.
Oh yeah, there it is. Nothing says technology like fractional Brownian motion.
Yes.
Oh man, why is he blue? And why are they green?
Because they're sprites. They're not real people.
Are they? Is she from Guardians of the Galaxy? She's green.
No.
Is she Gamora's older sister?
No, her name's Dot Matrix.
Oh.
And her younger brother is Enzo Matrix.
Did you ever have a Dot Matrix printer?
No, I never had a Dot Matrix printer. Our first printer was a Stylewriter 2, which was made by Canon for Apple. So I forget which rebadged Canon thing it was, but it was a really good printer.
I grew up in a PC household. So we had a Dot Matrix printer that I think my mom's company used to have these like once a year garage sales where they would sell all the crap that's been in the warehouse that like they don't use anymore. So one year we bought the Dot Matrix printer and it was so incredibly loud that they went back and her company was also selling. It was a housing for the Dot Matrix printer that's just slightly larger that has foam padding on the inside that was actually manufactured alongside the printer to just like close it up like a lid to keep the sound in, to quiet it down, because the printer was so loud. And this is a thing that people bought and put in their houses. And it was still absurdly loud.
Yes. one of my uncles had a Dot Matrix printer, and we used to use Windows Publisher 97 on his Gateway machine to print out birthday banners.
Was it black and white like a cow? Did he have the cow gateways?
No. It was just one of the white ones. It was sort of like whitish gray before they went to the... I don't know if that was before or after the cows.
I think that was before.
The inside of the stores looked like crazy farmhouses.
That's right. There was a store at one point, wasn't there?
Yeah, and you'd sit on like a metal tractor thing for the chair. Good job, guys.
They were really like the precursor to those little like mini Samsung stores inside of Best Buy's, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Because they had that thing going on too where they were in other stores at the same time.
Yeah, well, they did that after I think their stores started to flounder.
I never had a Gateway. I went from, I guess it was, oh God, some unnamed 486 to Micron to HP. And then that lasted me up until I built my own in film school because I was a nerd.
Oh, I built my own too. I had a 486 Giganto tower thing. I can't remember if it was a 486 DX2 or not. That was a piece of crud, but it ran Windows 95. And then
did it have a turbo button?
Yes, it did, but it didn't. It wasn't connected because we got it from my grandfather and apparently he didn't see the purpose.
Oh.
So that wasn't any fun to push the turbo button because it would just change the light, but it wouldn't do anything. And then there was the compact Presario that the family had.
So ugly.
It was hideous. And we bought it because it had like ATI Rage 128 graphics or some ridiculous card.
ATI Rage.
Yeah. It was not great, and it had Windows 98 on that one, and I tried to upgrade it to Windows 2000 and botched it, but then we successfully did that later.
Yeah, and then Windows
when I went away to college, I built my own box and put Windows 2000 Professional on it. It was all from parts from Newegg. A friend of mine, the roboticist, was built a very big advocate of building your own box, and you can put whatever you want on it, and, you know, dual boot Linux or whatever, and play Counter-Strike and stuff, and I didn't care about any of that. But I knew that I needed a PC, basically, because if you're going to be doing anything in, you know, a computer animation environment, you're not going to do it on a Mac, unless you're just sort of like a novice playing around. It's not really like a production-ready machine for doing 3D stuff. So
yeah, one of the guys I work with just recently built himself a desktop PC at home so he can do some Maya work at home. And I saw it at his house. It's this giant black... It looks like a bookshelf, just, you know, like waist-high bookshelf that it's got holes all over the side because, you know, you got to replace the fans with quieter fans that move more air. And then I think he did some liquid cooling to it, too, and it's just like... This thing is gigantic and ridiculous looking.
Well, the worst part is the cases. The cases for making your own PCs are just awful. They're either these hideous monstrosities where they have the windows and the light up stuff on the inside and all that, or they have the giant cutouts for the fans, or the cutouts that are pre-cut, ready to be popped out.
Yeah,
but not popped out. So you just have like these little tiny razor thin holes all through it. I don't know. It's a whole market of disgusting stuff. And when I moved out here, I got a Gateway laptop cause it was on sale. And I was just like, oh, well I need this. Cause what if I want to do anything at home? I didn't want to do anything at home. I played World of Warcraft on that and that was it.
Of course you did.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And then I rage quit on that one. But the machine just sort of imploded on itself, as Windows is wont to do. And because it's Gateway, they don't give you a real disk to reinstall. They give you this little crappy disk that's just like, oh, well, let's just try to diagnose your system and replace some drivers and, you know, whatever. Roll back to factory settings. It's like, no. Just reinstall everything. Everything is hosed. And it won't do it. So I just gave up on it, and I went out one day and I bought my MacBook, which was my first new Mac that I'd ever owned, and the first Mac I'd owned in like 6 years at the time. It was a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, I can't imagine ever going back. I mean, this place I've been working for the past week, they have a bunch of like really hardcore PC workstations that dual boot Windows and Linux, and one of them is a super micro server that again is the size of a table, and it's just so loud. And I was expressing to them like, I don't know how you guys sit in here because it's so effing loud. It's absurd. Like, it's dead silent in my office because I run everything off my MacBook Pro, and they're all just staring at me with blank faces. Like, what do you mean it's so loud? You just get used to this like constant 75 dB drone of nothing.
Yeah, no, I couldn't handle that. My one that I built was on the noisier side, even though I tried to use less noisy parts. But apparently, the opinions on what constitutes less noisy can fluctuate wildly between manufacturers. But you know, at work, at all the places that I went, they've all had, you know, HP or Dell workstations, like the big black monolith boxes that, you know, don't have any sort of like crazy windows or anything on them. They're just sort of uniform and very corporate looking. And so they're fine. They're a little not super loud, but you can tell when it's on and you can tell when it's off.
Do they sit on your desk?
No, underneath, because they're just too big. They're like MacBook. They're like the old Mac Pros, the cheese grater ones, only with a cheap plastic case.
Yeah, my previous employer in Santa Clara, they put all of their Mac Pros in a server closet, and somehow, I don't know the technical details because I'm not that smart. They converted all of the cable runs to like Cat 5, Cat 6, and ran that to the edit suite, so there was no actual system in the room with you. It was just your monitor and your input stuff.
Oh, so it was like a PC over IP? You had like a terminal that would access over the network an actual machine?
No, I mean, everyone was like hardwired directly to their machine, but like they converted the cable to SDI or Cat6. I can't remember what it was. And they ran the cables through the building.
Yeah, but I think that means that it's actually, you have like a thin client on your side that lets you log in. Because then there's a little box on your end that your keyboard and mouse and stuff plugs into?
No, it goes right into the wall. I think they used a USB keyboard and mouse plugged into the monitor, and the monitor ran the rest of the way. I don't know. I didn't use them when I was there.
I'm just saying, because Cat 5 is a networking thing, so it won't actually carry the anyway.
Maybe it was SDI cable. I don't remember.
Okay. Unimportant. Anyway, PCs suck. But they were super powerful when you get those like crazy Xenon configurations. And it's really nice when you can take advantage of that multi-threading. And you miss it sometimes when you hear the fan on your MacBook start whining because you're just trying to open a file, and it makes you sad.
Yeah, I don't get that so often, except when I render.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, when I had for this, you know, the side project that I'm doing the Shake stuff on.
Yeah.
You'd think like, because the software is so old, that it must just run like buttery smooth and super fast and all this stuff on my modern hardware, because obviously it's ancient software.
Yeah.
But that also means it's not optimized in any way, so it also runs like crap. And it takes forever, and it spins up all the fans when you start doing anything like a blur or a defocus operation or anything, just spinning the fans.
Yeah. I thought of you this place I'm at again. I was looking through one of the storage rooms just for something else, unrelated to the show maybe, and I found a new inbox copy of Shake that had never been used. It's just sitting there. I was like, oh,
mint condition.
I want to install this and play with it. I found Final Cut Studio, like 1, 2, and 3. I found like two versions of Pro Tools with an M-Box just sitting there. Not a giant NVIDIA graphics card. I'm like, why is all this stuff just hanging out in the corner? Like, oh, yeah, took it out here and there. Never donated or threw it away or whatever. Like, okay, guys, like all this software, you could do things with this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't get your hopes up about Shake.
I kind of want to install it because I never like used it full time.
Oh, well, you can always ask them if they have an instance that's running somewhere still, or if they'll loan you the box and you'll promise to give it back to them.
See, I couldn't even do that because I don't have an optical drive.
Anywhere?
No. I mean, I guess Amanda's laptop has an optical drive. I think it still works. She's on like 10.5.
Oh.
The old pre unibody MacBooks.
Yeah, but shouldn't she be able to run something newer than 10.5?
Oh, she doesn't care.
Oh. Okay.
Safari works, and she has an iPhone, so she does everything else there.
Yeah, Jason was like on Leopard or something, and I was like, no, you need to just upgrade. Just upgrade to Snow Leopard. You know, it's no big deal, and then you can go straight on to using the latest from the Mac App Store, because apparently they don't make you download all the intervening versions if you have anything that lets you have access to the Mac App Store.
Oh, that's good.
And it's free now, so I was just like, please, just do it. It's just making me crazy. Like, I'm opening your computer and it has all this, like, you don't think that they've changed a lot in OS X over the years, but like when you start to see all of the little tiny things that are in Leopard and you see all the things that are in Mavericks, you're just like, this is making me absolutely bananas. Just fix it. It's annoying me. But of course, he set it up in such a way that it has the reversed scrolling on it, and that also makes me crazy, and I can't use his computer.
You mean natural scrolling?
Which is the one that does what the iPhone does?
Natural scrolling.
Okay, that's the one I hate.
I like it.
I hate it.
Love it.
I want it to work like how my mouse works. Because
well, reverse your mouse.
No, but I don't want to reverse my mouse. This isn't Halo. I don't want to. I don't want to reverse the controller.
Oh, were you not an inverted gamer?
No.
Oh, see, there's the thing. I was. I preferred inverted on what is it, flight simulators or Doom or whatever.
Mm. Some say potato. Some say potato. Let's call the whole thing off.
Got to be inverted. Now here's a quick tangent on the upgrading the other laptop. This is how the education system is literally ruining everything. She has to use these horrible Office 365 apps because that's what they use in their computer classes or whatever, their computer labs at school. And she's coming home bitching about how Macs suck because they don't have the same thing as the Windows computers and how, you know, it can't run Office 365 and her version of Safari or whatever the problem was, but she was just getting really upset that she couldn't use the same software that they had there. And I was like, well, you can. We can just buy Office for $300 or whatever the hell it is. And it's like, we eventually found a way around to using iWork in the cloud for all of her work assignments, and it worked well enough. But like, people at colleges are convincing people that Office is the right way to do things and the thing you should learn, where, in my opinion, it is an abomination and should be banned from the earth.
I think this is something where we're going to agree. Because the one thing I will say is that I don't think that the world could operate on Markdown alone. I don't think that that's the solution. I don't think it's just that, you know, people aren't using their Markdown text editors to the fullest capabilities that are available.
That's why we have HTML.
Yeah, easy. So I don't think that it necessarily answers everyone's problems. But on the other hand, Word is such an archaic, horrible thing on any machine, even in Office 365. But nothing beats using Outlook and Link. Things where they've added this coat of paint over everything that is supposed to make it better, and all it does is hide the fact that the software underneath is ancient and falling apart.
I have two things here. The only thing that beats using Outlook and Link is Microsoft Access, which is a required part of the curriculum. Microsoft's database application that literally nobody has ever used in a real world scenario. And this place, again, that I'm working this week, they've upgraded their, where you check in to get a guest badge so everyone knows that you don't actually work there, in the front lobby. They've upgraded that to this little touchscreen computer, which it drives me insane that it doesn't capitalize the first letter of your name, even though it should know that. But it has a little sticker. You know the little stickers that say like Intel Inside or like NVIDIA or whatever the things are on the bottom? This computer has a sticker that says optimized for Link.
Oh my God.
I don't even know what that means. I've never seen that before. I took a picture of it and I will send it to you. But
have you used Link at this place?
Oh yeah, I've used Link in my previous career. It's the worst. Yeah, but yeah, it says optimized for Link next to the little Dolby sound sticker and the Energy Star sticker.
Does optimized for Link mean they just randomly took a soldering iron to the board just to make everything malfunction half the time? Because that's the only thing I can think of that would be optimized for Link.
Maybe because it has like a webcam or something and Link does video calling or something. I have no idea.
Link is awful. Link is an abomination.
But this is now like, this is a standard, a certification of some sort that you can have a sticker on the computers you sell that says optimized for Link. As if that's going to make you stand out on the Best Buy show floor.
I want to make a sticker that says optimized for defocused, and then we'll just sell those.
Is it going to be a middle finger?
Yeah. It needs to be one of those like crazy holographic metallic ones. Optimized for defocused.
I'm going to get those Marvel cards out of my dad's attic in the next couple days, but I went back and I got a couple boxes. I got my old Super Nintendo out, and I'm going to hook that up here and play again soon, but I'm looking for those Marvel cards.
Are you a Super Nintendo kid?
I had one.
I was a Sega Genesis kid.
Ooh, let's fight. No, yes. Let's not.
No.
I was not really that into video games, although I did have a Game Genie.
No, yeah, I didn't care, and I didn't have a Game Genie. I wasn't really a big gamer because I would get a little ways into anything that had levels and then I would just stop. And then the fighting games I would mainly use to fight with my brother. And I would play like Mortal Kombat 2, which is my favorite game on the Sega Genesis. And the sound is way better on the Sega Genesis than it is on the SNES version. It is. And so
it sounds better in the arcade.
Moving
it
past
these, it plays on vinyl through the stereo system.
Moving past these indisputable facts, let's go. I would pick Raiden because I would just do the teleport, fly across the screen, teleport, you know, fly across the screen, because you could just keep hitting the combo buttons because I had the turbo controller. And I would make him play.
Oh, so you liked your Sega Genesis because you could cheat.
Well, it wasn't cheating. They made him with turbo buttons. And so I had the turbo controller and I made him play with the not turbo controller and he could play as any other character he wanted. And then I would just beat him up with Raiden.
Oh boy. Yeah, I have I have Mortal Kombat 2, and I have Street Fighter 2, I think, in there. And I also have Donkey Kong Country and 2, 1 and 2. I have a True Lies game, which I didn't know existed, but apparently I have that.
Oh, my God.
It's got Arnold on the cover.
I want to play the True Lies video game, and I want to watch True Lies, and then we can do an episode on that, because that would just be amazing.
I don't even know what the True Lies game would be. Like, you fly around in a Harrier and shoot a guy on a horse or something?
I have no idea. It's probably just one of those things where they have the same engine that they used for all of those movie side-scroller games.
It's
where
just Contra, but they changed it.
Yeah, you just walk across and you punch guys, and then they fall over and dissolve away, as they are wont to do.
If the Super Nintendo actually does still work when I plug it in, I'll be sure to report back on what the True Lies game is. But just like all PC hardware, the Super Nintendo is completely yellowed and tan looking, except for the plastic where the cartridge goes in, which is still pristine gray. I don't know why they decided to use two different kinds of plastic, but the majority of the system is this horrible 1990s PC color, and just the area around the slot is a nice gray.
Cool story, bro.
Yep. So 41 minutes into this, you want to actually talk about our movie?
Yeah. So, speaking of the 90s.
Yes. It's been a very nostalgic week.
Yeah. Well, I think it was partially my fault. Because we were making fun of someone on Twitter for not knowing more about 90s music. And the thing that made me think of 90s music, of course, is Empire Records, peculiar cult classic of a film that is not critically acclaimed and was not really a huge box office success or anything, but it has a special place in my heart as being a strange, very, 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 very 90s movie. Like, I couldn't think of anything that would make this more 90s, except for, of course, adding Orbital at the end. But I don't think they had made Orbital when this movie was out.
No, it was 1995.
Yeah, it has our homeboy Ethan Embry in it.
as the most spastic version of himself that he could possibly be.
Yeah, well, I mean, the pop brownies will do that.
It's like they just fed him caffeine and sugar for the entire duration of filming this.
Yeah, and then there was that guy who was on the first season of CSI Miami, who I don't know if he's been in anything else, who plays Lucas.
Yeah, you know what he was in? He was in Dazed and Confused.
Oh, I've never seen Dazed and Confused.
He was the pothead in Dazed and Confused, of which there is a sticker on the register in Empire Records that says it's for the Dazed and Confused soundtrack.
Oh, I've never seen Dazed and Confused.
Easter egg, how dare you? Go see Dazed and Confused because it's awesome.
Okay.
It's the origin of McConaughey. Like, how can you not have seen Dazed and Confused?
I don't know.
It is like the Star Wars Episode 4 of McConaughey's career. Anywho.
Moving right along. Of course, you have Liv Tyler,
yes.
Who is interesting. And you have several other people from the 90s.
Joey Lauren Adams?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Renee Zellweger?
Yes.
This movie, it's clear where the entirety of Joey Lauren Adams' career came from. It's Renee Zellweger's character. Is that too harsh?
No.
Just like all of her characters from the Kevin Smith movies are the continuation they replaced, like, you know, in the sequel to this movie, they replaced Renee Zellweger with Joey Lauren Adams. And that's just, they kept going with the character.
Mm. Oh, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention Anthony LaPaglia, who is famous for other better things than this.
One of the kindest, most loving record store owners I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, he puts up a lot of crap.
This movie has some very not subtle undertones going throughout it.
Mm-hmm.
Since there's clearly not much in the way of plot. This movie is grunge and alternative, just personified and sanitized for movies. It's everyone is their own kind of societal misfit, where they don't have any place in the world or friends or family or whatever their individual problem is. But they all come together under the loving umbrella of music and Empire Records. And they're all misunderstood together because, no, yeah, man.
Well, you're missing the important part. At the beginning, they're not really unified. It is part of the 90s-ness of this movie, that by the third act, they will all have come together to get behind one another and fix each other's problems in their lives. And
they've
and
all been
succeed.
Friends for years, though.
Well, no, not really. Like the Liv Tyler and Renee Zellweger don't get along with Robin Tooney's character, Deborah. And Lucas is friends with the other guys, but doesn't necessarily get along with the manager. And so you have like some tension there, especially when Lucas, you know, robs everything at the beginning of the movie. And so that creates some other tension. And we get to meet great characters like Warren, who has nothing to do with the film.
Yeah. And the other way that this is like super grunge, like I'm misunderstood and I don't have a place in the world, is every one of these characters is just like the weirdest, quirkiest people you've ever, like, I don't know any of these people. Like, we talked about it, Can't Hardly Wait, like, I'm not that person, but I kind of know that person. In this movie, I don't know any of these people. These people are all fake weirdos, and it's hilarious. Except maybe for AJ, because in all honesty, AJ could be dropped into 2014 with his like little sweater and hipster hair and everything, and he would fit just fine, like, right now.
Yeah, he'd go work on his art stuff, and he should go to art school, and he should live his life and his dreams.
Can I just, as an aside, there's not really much to say about the plot of this, so I'm just going to jump right to the end. AJ apparently got into art school in a day.
Yes.
Like, he made the decision to go to art school and got in the city of his choice in over the course of this movie. But, yeah, well, that's fine. The other thing I thought was funny is that Liv Tyler and AJ getting together in the end. This is the first of two movies in which Liv Tyler's love interest is named AJ, because Affleck in Armageddon was also named AJ.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder if that's coincidence or if that's a callback. Maybe Michael Bay is a big Empire Records fan.
No, they probably made that the name just so it'd be easier for dubbing. They could pull lines from this movie in case there was an emergency.
And then, like, every one of these characters, not only are they spastic, but they have, like, they have this dark side. They have this deep, serious attitude. Like, every one of these things, they all have their, like, serious flip-out moment where life is super serious, man. It's, you know, it's nothing to be taken lightly. I've got my, like, my adult problems, even though I'm 17 years old, because Liv Tyler is taking diet pills so she can stay up all night, so she can get A's, so she can go to Harvard.
Yeah, oh, it's so after-school special. All of their problems are like an ABC after-school specials.
I was describing that part to Amanda, because I don't know if she's seen it or she just didn't remember. She's like, oh, that sounds like that Saved by the Bell episode where Jesse did the exact same thing. It's like, oh my god, I forgot that they did that.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one with Elizabeth Berkeley was taking speed in order to get better grades.
I wondered who lifted it from who. We should probably look that up, but oh my god, it's so 90s, and it's life is serious and dramatic, and, you know, the suicide attempt from Deborah, who then shaved her head and then was all super okay with them staging that like weird fake funeral for her.
The living wake where she laid down, that was very strange.
It was very strange.
Like, I'm happy that she was feeling better by the end, but I feel like it really should have been on Joe Anthony's character to make sure she got some actual help, because that seems sketch. Just staging a funeral and being like, yeah, let's do that on company time. Nobody man the registers. We're all just back here doing this crazy ass thing.
Well, it's not like any of them really took a whole lot of it very seriously.
No. And of course, through the whole thing, I would say that there's the only tenuous thing tying together the entire thing is that it's Rex Manning Day, and that it is all about the character Rex Manning coming in a washed-up has-been of a person, to be a cautionary tale about washed-up has-beens. And that's what all of the other little things in here, all of the other defects of these characters ping-pong off of, is this one jerk.
I love that Liv Tyler was reading about his interests in Tiger Bean magazine.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, Rex Manning he's basically wearing Austin Powers clothes, and I wonder who he was actually supposed to be written about. I wonder if there's some sort of trivia about that. Because it feels like a lot of these characters were, you know, not so subtly pulled from other things. Like, AJ feels like the writers liked Christian Slater, so they went with that. Except he's not quite as Christian Slater-y as Christian Slater.
Yeah. Well, what you gonna do? You can only squeeze in so much 90s.
There's a special extended edition of this that has an additional 17 minutes of footage. Did you know that?
I did know that. I was reading up on this, and it turns out that they shot like a metric crap ton of stuff, and the ended up having to cut it down because it just went on forever, and it was supposed to take place over the course of 2 days instead of just one day, like it does in the final product.
That would make a bit more sense.
Yeah, that everyone's life changes in less than 24 hours. But they cut it down, and they lost some other characters that were in it, which I'm assuming means mostly Jane's parts, because if you notice, Debbie Mazar shows up as the assistant and then says, screw this, I'm leaving.
Yeah,
and
after
then
like a 5-minute heart-to-heart, she's like, I'm going to quit and go roam the world.
Yeah, and then like 5 minutes from the end of the movie, all of a sudden she's back and helping them out, and it's like, okay, gang, I'm going to pitch in now. It's like, wait, where did you come from? I thought you left.
Yeah. I don't mean to derail you, but I actually clicked on the box office link on IMDb. You were not kidding when you said did not do well critically. Grossed $300,000.
Yes.
Opened in the U.S. and Spain only. In Spain, it made $99,000. I don't know. That is not a lot of money for something that probably cost at least $1 million or $2.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was the 90s. You could get away with that back then. I'm sure they've made it up on home video.
Oh God, I certainly hope so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're getting money from us. Wait, was this on Netflix? No, it was not. We rented it on iTunes.
Yeah, I rented it on iTunes.
So they're probably still trying to work off that back end money.
Yeah, everybody's trying to work off back-end money.
I'm trying to work on front-end money.
Oh.
Awkward.
Yeah, that's what someone said. I was going to say, I didn't understand your second choice for what you wanted me to watch.
Are we done?
Or was there more you were going to say?
I have more things to say.
Oh, okay, but you were just ending awkwardly.
No. I was just looking around. I'm not done.
Okay.
I thought it was weird how they kept, like, occasionally breaking the fourth wall, like, 3 or 4 times, and that's about it. Maybe that was just, like, a stylistic thing. I mean, mm-hmm. Ethan Embry did it once or twice, but, like, when he looked at the camera when he was screaming shoplifter, mm-hmm. that was odd. I'm not, yeah. Like, I couldn't tell if in the beginning they were going to try and do, like, a secondary talking to the audience Ferris Bueller style thing, and then it just kind of went away. I was like, oh, okay, that was odd.
Well, wasn't it just Ethan Embry's character that talked to the screen?
I swear that maybe, I think AJ did it once too.
Oh, okay. And because of course you have the moment where Ethan Embry is eating his pot brownies and watching Guar.
Guar, yes, I have a big note in here for Guar, which is unbelievable that they're in this movie.
Yeah, I like that.
See, are you a fan of Guar?
No, it's just that it was unexpected. I'm not a fan of Guar at all.
this movie's ideas of metal is weird.
Yeah. And the conflict between Renee Zellweger and Gina. Gina and Liv Tyler's character of Corey. Comes out of kind of nowhere, only sort of like a weird jealousy thing, and then Gina, to get back at her, screws Rex, as people are wont to do in the 90s, and that was like an interesting scene.
Not only did they go for like every weirdo character, they also threw in like every insecurity that any teenager has ever had, like the the being called a slut or promiscuous or whatever the hell they were giving Renee shit for at one point, and just, you know, she retreats into her insecurity and goes off and sleeps with Rex Manning on the copy machine, because apparently that's what people do in the back of record stores, aside from glue quarters to the floor, which I thought was actually kind of funny.
Yeah, he doesn't have to explain his art. But I did think it was strange that when we're introduced to Warren the shoplifter, and he shoplifts, and Lucas catches him and takes him back in, and Joe is very uncharacteristically nice about it, and has him sent away. When Warren shows back up again, waving around a loaded weapon,
firing it into the ceiling, no less.
Yeah, then everyone's still cool with that, and they want to give him a job. I was like, oh, that's pushing the niceness, I think, just a wee bit too far.
It's this, like, social outcast thing. Everyone has, like, half a degree in psychology, and it's clear that Warren is only doing this out of hurt because he has something deep down inside of him that is wrong. And, hey, man, let's just, you know, let's talk it out. Let's love. Let's be a family. You can be part of our family because clearly you don't want to kill us. You're just misunderstood. So,
yeah.
Let's put the gun away and then we'll give you a job. Because that's how things in the world work.
Yeah. Well, it was also kind of the It was 1995. I don't think you could make a movie like this now.
No. And you mentioned it on Twitter, but we got to bring it up here. The opening with
Lucas.
Lucas, yeah. He mentions how vinyl has a better sound than CD. Not only does vinyl sound better, but water and fire don't mess up vinyl the way they mess up CDs. In some cases, they actually make them better.
Yes.
Did you know, apparently, warping vinyl with a lighter makes it sound better?
I know. It adds warmth. It adds warmth to the sound. It's
quantifiable warmth. Yeah. BTUs of sound.
So much warmth. I don't understand. It was like a total Casey List moment right there.
Yeah.
I
mean, but that fits right in with the absurd utopia that is this world.
Oh yeah. Total absurd utopia. Nothing really makes a lot of sense here. And it's very 90s and very after school special, and there's just all these little character vignettes for all these employees, and their life problems get sorted out over the course of the movie by working together and saving the store, because you need to save something. It's the 90s. You need to rally around and
never mind raise the fact money. That, like, the way they saved the store was throwing this illegal street bash to basically just pay back the money they already lost. So there was no additional money that they gave to the owner.
Yeah, but just like how Joe explained it was that he would have to pay back the lost money, the money that Lucas lost during the movie, out of his own savings, which meant he couldn't buy the store, and they were going to turn into a record town or whatever it was called. But if he didn't have to use his savings, then his plan to buy it would go along without a hitch. So that's why it became only about raising up enough money to cover the lost sum.
Okay. It was still kind of ridiculous.
Oh, you know, no. It was totally ridiculous. The fact that they raised the money that night and organized everything out of nowhere. Because if you also pay attention to the timeline, you can tell that since you know that it was supposed to happen over 2 days, you could probably forgive it, but since you know that it happens in one day in the movie as seen, then everything just kind of transpires way too fast, where all of a sudden they've gone from the very end of all of the things they were fixing in the afternoon to a party in like 2 hours.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of preparation that went into those 2 hours.
And talk about another thing that would never happen today. Like, where they have the debate about whether or not they should get a permit to sell beer on the street, and they're like, forget it. We'll just sell illegal beer from in front of our store. Which would happen for about 3 minutes before you all got arrested.
And I'm sure nobody would question the safety of putting Renee Zellweger up onto the little rickety roof so that she can sing Sugar High.
I couldn't question the safety because I was too busy questioning how the Burko character was singing when his face was nowhere near the microphone.
Don't think too hard, Dan.
Now that you've told me that it originally took place over 2 days, it makes sense because there was that scene like in the middle, well, like 2 minutes into the credits where it just fades back on and Ethan Embry and one of the other characters are just sitting on the curb talking about bands for like, no, there was no like plot reason why they were just talking about bands. And then it just fades back out and goes into credits again. But the one thing they did say in that little scene that meant nothing that I thought was worth bringing up is that Primus is terrible and the Pixies are better, which I agree with.
Yes. Well, I thought it was just a funny discussion because nobody really has those kinds of discussions these days.
Primus has got some gnarly bass lines, but they're not that good.
I think I heard Merlin say that on an episode of Roderick or something.
I am not a fan of Primus.
So, are we done?
You just mute for some reason?
Yes, just real quick. I realize it probably wasn't for the best that it just sounds like urination every time I pour the tea can. So I muted it.
Oh, that's staying in the show.
No. But the... we're wrapped on Empire Records, right?
Final thoughts. It was entertaining. It was incredibly 1995. It was completely absurd. It was great at sort of building a feeling of what that time was like, even though you couldn't take a single actual moment out of that movie and say this is something that actually happened to a person at that time.
No, well, I think it's about it gives you the feeling of what media was like in the 90s more than it gives you a feeling of what people's lives were like in the 90s.
Definitely. We got to find a way to give hope to these misguided kids of this age, but we got to reach them on their level. So grunge.
Yes. An alternative. Oh, boy. So moving on to the other 90s movie, which I didn't realize was going to be a 90s movie. and then I figured it out. I was like, oh, this is why Dan picked it.
I told you it would be kind of related in a completely painful way.
I thought it was just because it was high schoolers. And then I was watching it. I was just like, oh, wait, they're not. No.
Let's see. It's high school.
They're not doing it.
It takes place in 1992. Also takes place in 2011. Starring Josh Hutcherson and Shanley Caswell.
Okay. Now, I just want to say that ordinarily we say, like, oh, we're going to talk about a movie and... You know, we never give like a spoiler warning or anything, but I don't think there's any way we could possibly spoil this movie if no one wants to pay to go watch it. Like, no. I think that anything we say, like, you could still watch this movie and come away with exactly the same feelings about it.
Yeah, when you saw it, I was like, oh, God, it's a horror comedy. That's not going to end well. It's like, well, it's not really anything.
It didn't end well.
I thought it ended pretty well.
No.
Anyway, the movie to which we are referring is 2011's Detention by Joseph Kahn, not the Dolph Lundgren one. This movie is a personal favorite. I like it a lot, partially just because I like Joseph Kahn's work, all of it, most of it. And it's utterly insane, and it's fun, and I really enjoy watching it for some reason. But I don't expect anyone to understand any bit of why I like it. It's just one of those things that I like, and I thought it fit nicely in this... The dovetailed nicely with Empire Records movie full of misunderstood weirdo characters and 90s pop culture references. Just give me what you thought about the movie. We could even stop after that.
So I think I know why you picked it, and I can see how someone might appreciate certain things about it if they were fans of certain genre kind of things.
Could you tiptoe around that any more delicately?
But I gotta say, as taking the whole movie, like just like looking at it from far away, I don't like it, and I think it's kind of a complete mess. And I think that it very much reads like it is Joseph Kahn's personal project. Mm-hmm.
It was written by him and a gentleman named Mark Palermo, who is also a very funny man.
Okay, this was supposed to be funny, but
there's some comedy in it. Now, yeah. And I do want to say that a lot of people will rely on the crutch of saying the more you see it, the more you'll get, and I don't think that's really a good metric for measuring the success of a movie. But I do enjoy watching this on repeated views because there's a lot to it, and you catch more when you watch it more. But yeah, that you shouldn't have to do that to enjoy a movie.
No, well, I'll give you this. I wasn't sure what to expect going in. I didn't have a preconceived notion that I was going to completely hate it. I joked that I wasn't going to like it, but I honestly was going to give it a shot because I didn't figure that you were asking me to watch this because you didn't like it and it was just some sort of complicated torture mechanism. So
it's no Dune.
It's no Dune. But I... could tell immediately from the opening credits that it was not my kind of film.
Are you telling me you didn't like the opening credits sequence?
No, I did not like it. I did not care for it one bit. It was sort of cliched to immediately Okay, this is where it's definitely gonna get spoilery. But since I'm not really sure anyone's going to be surprised by what happens in the opening credits, I don't think it's a spoiler, because you're introduced to a character who's completely unlikable and awful, and she goes through big monologuing to the camera moments of explaining things about her and her life and her system and all this stuff that makes you really, 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 really not like her at all. And then immediately you start to sense, just from the fact that this is supposed to be in some way a comedy about a teen slasher movie, that maybe she'll get Drew Barrymore'd in the opening sequence. And she does get Drew Barrymore'd in the opening sequence, where her throat is slashed and then she goes out a window onto the roof of a car. It's pretty gruesome, but what distracted me most was the camera work. And that stayed constant through the movie, was just constantly being aware of where the camera was moving. I don't want to have that level of awareness, because then the camera becomes its own character itself, and I'd much rather it just be in the background, just so I can pay attention to whatever the ideas are on the screen, the characters are on the screen, whatever their dialogue is. I don't really need to, like, track with her out the window onto the hood of the car. That doesn't give you anything. It's just like a, and this keeps happening throughout the movie. It's like a director high five of, man, that was really hot, complicated, bro. Like, oh yeah, totally complicated. Filming that was crazy, bro.
It's actually not that complicated, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but he does other things later on. And it's, I don't want to be that aware of it. And it's really distracting. It takes you out of the moment. The first time I actually laughed in the whole thing leading up to that, where she's saying all these things that are supposed to be funny about what a horrible person she is, and we as the audience are not supposed to like her but laugh at her, I didn't laugh through any of that. The first time I laughed was when we cut to our main protagonist in her bed, and it has the superimposed the burn-in below her for the kind of character she is, and she seemed aware of it a little and confused about why it was there. And she pulls her hand out, and it has red stuff on it, and it turns out to be ketchup from falling asleep with French fries. So that's all. That little moment there was fine, and I was like, okay, so maybe there's hope for this. And then we go on her walk to school, and she meets the hipster guy who robs her for her iPod shuffle, and then. Which is just sort of a weird, awkward scene. And we then go to her high school, which looks like a high school I think I've seen in probably 20 other films. It's got to be somewhere out here in LA.
It is.
And then, like, I think they use the same one from Donnie Darko and probably Mastermind. So then they go into the high school, and we go on these big, long, Steadicam shots, which I seem to remember somebody saying that they didn't like Steadicam shots.
These are not Steadicam shots, and this is actually the opening credit scene that I was talking about—the hallway scene with the various reveals of the names and the comedy of the way it sets up the conflict between Hutcherson and Billy Nolan. Yeah, I liked that scene a lot, particularly because of the Hanson cover.
When it started fading in towards the end, I was just like, wait a minute. What are you doing? Why are you doing this? I thought you were a music video director. Why are you torturing me?
You know, he actually had Hanson come on set to watch them film that.
Is that why they got that special credit at the
Probably.
End?
Probably.
Oh, boy.
But yeah, then I don't even know how to talk about this movie other than to say one thing I do want to mention. I'm not sure if this is... taking our PG podcast and making it R equally with the movie, but the when Taylor is getting dressed in the morning, her pink pants are very tight and revealing. That was actually CG work by Digital Domain.
No,
they didn't. It was.
No.
Yep.
Dan, I'm very disappointed in the world.
In whom?
John Texter. I don't know. But yeah, that's uncalled for. And then,
it was specifically requested and directed, and somebody sat there in a chair making that.
Well, It wouldn't surprise me any more than any of the other questionable effects choices they made throughout this film, I guess.
What other questionable effects choices? The time-traveling bear?
With the Iron Man interior and the dust hits every time they punched each other. like, that was really
helpful. Roadhouse for Steven Seagal.
No, but it didn't need to be, like, obviously CG composited dust hits from some library of photographic dust hits that were just tracked in.
Just well, bug me. We'll schedule a meeting with Ingenuity Engine to see what they have to say about that.
Mm. Well, I'm sorry, Ingenuity Engine. You tried, but I wasn't a fan. And there was all the
they do
the
all this work.
The fly wings.
Uh-huh.
Which, speaking of, I gotta say, I started to come back into enjoying this movie at some point. There was all the stuff about how one character was really into the 90s, and it was sort of like a mocking thing. And I was like, okay, I can get behind this little eccentric quirk of hers. And there was the whole thing about the football jock being a jerk and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, it became The Fly. And I was like, what the hell just happened?
Exactly. You could say what the hell just happened for the majority of this movie.
Yeah, well, but see, that's the thing. It's just like, why did you knock me out of your film again by all of a sudden changing gears? And this was not a subtle shift. This is not like, oh, we're just going to have like two killers in our movie now or something like that. Or we're going to, you know, like have another character show up and then you can't tell who the killer is. No, this is, we made one of our characters into Jeff Goldblum in The Fly. And just because. And then there's a backstory we're going to explain about him that involves aliens that, and now he's a fly.
And a meteor.
Yeah, it's just like I.
And now you know why I picked this to go alongside Empire Records, because it has the ridiculous, quirky characters who have troubled pasts and are not people that you would ever meet.
Well, I thought you were going to pick it because of 1992.
Well, that too. I mean, but yeah. never mind. Like, you've got the quirk of Hutcherson, like, skateboarding around through the halls. And, you know, they cut back to, what, like, a month before. They show him, like, riding a unicycle down the halls. Because apparently he's just this weirdo hipster, as he explains in his description of the music website he plans on starting.
Yeah. Oh, and then there's the whole thing with Cinderella. The slasher film embedded inside of the movie that someone is copying the appearance of to conduct their slashing in the actual film. And I actually thought that the parody movie that they inserted in the film was more interesting than the actual comedy movie that they had.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I gotta be honest. I mean, they had like all the ridiculousness of Saw in it. Although it was a little torture porny for me, I can't tolerate much of that. But fortunately, it's a very short scene.
Term in the movie,
yeah. And then, you know, we have to deal with another alien story because the bear, for some reason, is from another planet.
Yeah, he's an alien bear. Who was abducted by aliens and dropped off on Earth and apparently died at some point.
The planet Starclaw or whatever.
Planet Starclaw. And he has the ability to apparently be turned into a time machine.
Yes, by a high school student.
Named Toshiba.
Yes. And so they... and there's the Freaky Friday takeoff in here where they mind swap, but they don't mind swap in their current bodies, they mind swap through time.
I see, this movie is absurd, but I still think it's too much fun to not watch.
Okay. So you don't have a problem with anything so far that I've mentioned.
This is, I think the only way I can defend this movie, or I can't defend the movie, I can defend why I like it, is it's ridiculous, but I enjoy watching it. This is one of the instances where I will say this does not make sense as a movie in really any way, shape, or form. It's a story about two characters, and they, if you remove all of their context, they almost have an arc that works. But the inciting incident for everything that happens to them is completely ridiculous and utterly insane. But it's still fun to watch for the bits of comedy, the nostalgia. Even just the way this being a crossover in terms of the timelines of 92 through 94, looking back at that now and the way it's represented by A, these high school kids, and B, the filmmakers, and then comparing that against Empire Records that was actually taking place back then, I think it's hilarious to see what we pick and choose to remember about the early 90s versus what we actually were like in the early 90s, which was just depressing and embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny. They go to the 90s house party, and the door opens, and Xander is dressed as Captain Picard. And greets her as such, and they are. Is she supposed to be dressed like someone that I was not aware of from
Claire Danes?
Yeah, but I
my so-called life.
I didn't see it.
It's a TV show.
Okay, I didn't see it. Anyway, so they go through the party scene, which I actually kind of thought was funny
because literally no one else was dressed up.
Yeah, and also she got really drunk and did the whole, like, trying to make someone jealous thing, but she did it really badly, which is why it was funny, rather than if she would actually just done an exact version of it. But then we go back into the ridiculous with the fight with the human fly, and then the human fly's ridiculous death, and...
His death wasn't that ridiculous. He got cut up with an axe.
No, he gets his hand stuck on a TV that he's trying to drag through a window to crush the killer. But yeah, rather than move his hand down, he just leaves his hand there, and then he gets his arm chopped off.
It got stuck. Yeah, there is no possible reason I could ever come up with why he has a TV on his hand at any point in this movie.
No, and then... I mean, his body parts fall on the grill outside from his dismemberment. It's really gruesome and sort of unnecessary. There was a recurring theme throughout the film of her, our main character's vegetarianism that she has lapsed on a few times. And so she spits out her hamburger. But it's just like so, like, it's not even campy. It's like, it's crossed into a very uncomfortable realm with stuff like that.
But yeah, he definitely set out to make an R-rated movie in pretty much all the ways that you can make an R-rated movie.
Yeah, and then it doesn't make any sense why the killer, the slasher in the real, quote-unquote, real film, is trying to kill her sometimes and not kill her other times. It seems totally unmotivated. Or any of the stuff about why he wants to destroy everyone in 1992, or time travels back to do that, or the mechanics of the detention room. Ostensibly, this whole movie is about when they are in detention, according to the title of the picture, and they spend very little time in detention, mm-hmm. and it's almost exclusively structured in a very strange way where... we see characters come and go from this circle of chairs, and they are not aware of things coming and going. It's not just heightened. It's beyond that. It's reality breaking. And we have the character who's been there for 18 years that no one has ever noticed, and he's in detention, even though no one has ever seen him, including the principal, doesn't know why he's there. But he does give us an interesting mechanic of seeing the students change over time as we do that very strange circular shot as we're moving around through all of the desks and back over his shoulder, and then all of the desks in the next timeline back over his shoulder, etc. That's mildly amusing because you see, you know, people listening to Backstreet Boys and dressed as Britney Spears and
wearing Von Dutch hats.
Yeah, it's all that. That's an interesting thing. It doesn't fit in this movie. It's interesting.
I'll give it that.
Yeah. But it's like, I feel like Hot Tub Time Machine is a much better time travel movie than this is.
Yeah.
Maybe. You don't like Hot Tub Time Machine?
I do. It's an entirely different sector of my brain. I couldn't even compare the two.
Well, they go back in time to change things in the past, and they use ridiculous means to do it, which is why I'm putting them together for this point of it, because this, at this part of the movie, it becomes all about time travel, about her, the discovery of her Freaky Friday-ness, the circular going back in time narratively to when he's been there, when he started going to detention, that one character. And then also, we finally get the unveiling of the time travel bear. Surprise. And so two characters leave there without anyone noticing. Time travel. One of them kills Dane Cook, then time travels. And then the other one chases him back in time. The two of them using the same bear somehow, the bear stayed, and going back there at two different points in time, and then our main protagonist goes back and chases after them to find out which one of them is the killer, thinking that it is the one that she is in love with.
You're almost losing me at this point with the description.
Well, it doesn't make any sense. That's my point. And so she goes back there, gets him out of the class where he's spent 6 weeks becoming a grade A student, but ostensibly the bear's been there the whole time, because otherwise it wouldn't be there in the future. So he could have just time traveled to a better point in time. But he's just hanging out, enjoying life. He's not at all concerned about what he could get good grades there. Yeah, not at all concerned about what Xander's doing. And then they march off to find the principal in the past who had set up a bomb.
Yes, this is again, just the little bit that I liked from Empire Records. It's the completely overdramatic, every problem is the end of the world, high school mentality, but just personified to a ridiculous level where if a person were to say, I wish I could go back in time and change these things, they literally do that. Or if I could switch brains with somebody who knew how to dance, they literally do that. And then they deal with what would happen because of that. And it's insane. And it doesn't make any sense. But I enjoy watching this movie because it's silly.
If you're going to go through all that effort of like trying to construct this thing where stuff between the past and the future are related to one another, then you need to follow through on that. Like, you can't just like sort of wave your hand when it's convenient, because they get Ione, who's in her mother's teenage body, to agree to go to the prom with... Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot the part where they blew up everything first and then time traveled back 6 minutes before they blew up everything. Don't run into themselves at all. And then... and then they...
this movie is not built to make sense.
No, and then they devise a separate plan where they get Ione to agree to go to the prom with the principal in the past, so that he won't have a reason to use the bomb. And then he agrees, they go to the prom, and we see in the future later on that they got married and they're happily together, and that her mom was pregnant with her. it's just awful. It's just so awful. And they, so this whole entire time, her mom has been married to Dane Cook, and that hasn't changed really anything in the future. Or if it did change things, and it does seem to have changed some things, then it didn't change enough that people no longer built the time machine, or that people no longer went back in time. So those things still happened. So that doesn't make any sense. Like, why did Ione of the future want to go back to the past at that time and switch bodies with her mom if her mom was so happy and not the drunk that she was at the beginning of the movie?
I don't know what you just said.
I know exactly. That's my point. None of this makes any sense. If you're gonna do time travel, you gotta do it right.
There's no way to make that the continuity that is suggested in this movie make any actual sense. It's just not possible.
I know, but that takes me out. Like, how am I supposed to? Okay. We have the human fly, we have body swapping through time, we have actual time travel through a bear that's from another planet.
How does this not sound like an entertaining movie?
Because none of these things work together.
Are none of the characters sympathetic?
No, none of them. None. I did not like Riley. I did not like what's his face? Clapton. Joss Hutcherson's character. I didn't like Ione. I didn't like Ione's mother as Ione. I didn't like any of the characters. Xander was your typical, you know, nerdy, doesn't get the girl, so he wants to kill everybody person, and so was the principal.
I wouldn't call him typical, but yes, that part of his character is typical.
Yeah, and it doesn't make any sense when Xander comes back at the end. We see him disintegrate in the past, and yet he's in the future and has already killed two of the people that were dead.
Well, in his timeline, he never traveled back to the past because they subverted that.
Yeah, but then they never traveled back to the past.
Well, they had to because they were there.
I know, but it doesn't make any sense.
I know it doesn't make any sense. It makes even less sense to people listening to this right now. So we can just end with you saying you probably don't recommend anyone see this because it's ridiculous.
If you are someone who really, really, really likes obvious camera work and who really, 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 really likes bad comedy, and who really, really, really,
it's
really...
It's not bad.
Okay. And who really, 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 really likes parodies of other genres embedded inside of their genre parody. if you like... I guess...
It's a filmmaking kitchen sink is what it is.
It is. It's just like every idea he's ever had went into this. Not to say anything of the alien vegetables from Canada.
Don't give that away because that's a spoiler.
Yes, because that was pivotal. I think it's just a train wreck. And if you can look past it being a train wreck, if you're somebody like, I don't know, Zach, Chachi, whatever.
Jenny loves Zach.
Yeah, Saichi. Here. You could probably look past all of this stuff and you're going to write something about how it's great because you like The Exorcist 3 or something, but I can't tolerate any of this.
You guys can keep your feuds to Twitter and keep that out of the show. Enjoy watching this movie. I think it is a filmmaking kitchen sink is a weird way to put it, but there are a lot of things that are interesting to watch, both the characters. I think some of the camera work is interesting to watch. I think some of the storyline is interesting to indulge in temporarily. It's not Citizen Kane. It's got a 5.8 on IMDb. Empire Records is a 6.7. I don't agree with that, but what do I care? I enjoy watching this movie, and I'm going to keep watching it over and over again.
Did it bug you when they would have bumps in the dolly work as the camera? Okay, just want to make sure.
Because this is an incredibly... We should have mentioned at the top that this is an indie production that was self-financed by Joseph Kahn and a couple investors, and only later convinced to be distributed by Sony. But he went like 10, 15 days over his schedule in the first place and went crazy in debt for it. But I'm sure he notices those things just as well as we do. There's even a place where you can hear the dolly, and it bothers me.
I didn't hear it, but I'll take your word for it.
It's in the fight scene. Great. Or him and Billy are getting ready to fight, and it moves from Xander to Clapton to Ione.
Mm.
But it's kind of lost in the mix. But for doing this himself, out of his own mind, with his own money, it's pretty spectacular, and I enjoy watching it.
Maybe
it's because I have a lot of context around when it was being made and following along with it and wondering what the hell this movie was going to be about, and then watching the final product and having had no correct expectations as to what this movie was going to be and being surprised in literally every way. Seeing it in the theater with, unsurprisingly, about 7 other people in San Francisco.
Yeah, I can't fault somebody for being able to make their dream happen, and so apparently this was his dream. I fault it for not being the dream that I want to watch, but I applaud him for his effort that he put in, because it's certainly not that he was lazy in terms of like scene construction or anything like that. Like he put effort into that.
It's the movie he set out to make. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, I just don't like it.
Well, To further rub salt in the really weird wound, I will watch this a million more times than I will ever watch American Hustle again, because that movie's just boring to me.
See, I would watch the opposite of what you just said.
I know you would.
And even in terms of, like, you know, smaller productions with a director-writer who finally gets to do the thing he wants to do, like, I would watch Equilibrium or something over this.
Yeah.
Really? You don't like the Tetragrammaton?
I didn't say I don't like it. I'm just talking about which one I would pick.
It's Gunkata, man.
Gunkata is such a thing dreamt up by somebody who lives in their mother's basement.
Well, I mean, after Ultraviolet bombed, he might be living in his mother's basement. I'm not sure.
Ultraviolet. I have that on HD DVD.
Yeah.
Kurt Blu-ray. Weiner. HD DVD.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That was... Who made that movie?
Kurt Weimer.
It's the same guy.
Yeah, written and directed by Kurt Weimer. And the films he made was One Tough Bastard in 1996, Equilibrium in 2002, and Ultraviolet in 2006. He'd just been a writer on a lot more things than he has been a director, including the Total Recall remake, Salt, Street Kings, The Recruit, Thomas Crown Affair, Sphere. I hated Sphere so much. God.
I hated Sphere especially because I actually really liked the book. But that was back when I used to still read things.
I kind of wanted to read it, but after seeing the movie, I wasn't sure if I would actually enjoy the book. Because
you'll never be able to get Dustin Hoffman and Sharon Stone out of your head.
Yeah, it's just abysmal. It's just an awful, awful, awful movie.
Yeah, it was one of the first books that I really, really enjoyed in, like, fiction sci-fi, and then I saw the movie, and it was just like, what are you doing to me?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Ultraviolet, you want to talk about a movie that has ridiculous camera moves, the flying into the glasses reflection and then flying back out the other direction and then doing it again. Like, good lord.
Yeah. I mean, I do like sometimes when people do that with mirrored reflections. Sometimes. Sometimes. You know, put emphasis on that. Like when they do it in Spider-Man 2 when Doc Ock is climbing up the side of the building.
Yes. But it's like not that. Like a thing that they do repeatedly.
No, it's not like, oh my god, this is going to be great camera work. Check this thing out. We're going to do the special effects thing and it's a total waste of money because nobody's going to like it. But camera work's the least of Ultraviolet's problems.
I don't even know that we have... I don't think there's enough internet to do a show about Ultraviolet.
No, I think I would just probably start making stabbing motions, which wouldn't be audible.
Toward your face?
Yeah, towards the microphone. You just hear...
kill it with radio.
Yeah.
What do you say? You want to kill this episode now that we've gone way over talking about a movie that you don't particularly enjoy?
Yes. Yes, let's time travel back to the beginning of this episode and make sure it never happens.
It's hopping a bear.
Mm-hmm. Hopping a bear.
And everyone, go out to your iTunes, Rent Empire Records, and buy Detention because I don't think it's rentable.
Or don't do that. If you live in another country, it's on Netflix.
You know what? Just like I did for Joe, I will buy you a copy of Detention. No. so you can make your own opinion of it, as I do with other people. I've bought a copy for one of my cousins, for somebody else, and yeah.
Okay, now I gotta ask though, since you brought that up, has this process of purchasing this movie for other people and trying to get them to watch it, has it panned out well for you, where they agreed that they liked the movie?
Oh, I don't care if they like it or not. I just want them to see it.
Okay, but I just wanted to know whether or not you've had any feedback that was positive. If I'm just the only jerk.
No, I mean, okay. Amanda enjoys it. Okay. I mean, it's not like a favorite movie of hers, but I made her see it in the theater with me twice, and then watch it a bunch of times at home.
You're weird.
Yes, I am.